Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks so much for joining us. I am very happy to give some airtime to a new law that is taking effect in Georgia and very timely right about now that has to deal with concussions and especially in youth sports. Some new information. I think earlier in the year, there was a law passed called the Return to Play Act of 2013 by Governor Deal. And it is similar to many other states where we have contact sports and are treating concussions seriously and much differently than we have in the past. And just to tell you a little bit about how serious this issue is, 173,000 people in general in the United States are treated for concussion in a year. And in Georgia, particularly with the youth programs, they treated about 1,400 kids for concussions. And almost 40, I think over 40 states have now either are in the process or have already passed return to play in concussion laws. So that's why we have this timely topic. And of course, we're starting up with high school football programs and pro football programs and lacrosse and all kinds of both professional and youth athletic sports programs now. So we're very, very timely with this topic. I have three people with me today in the studio. I'm thrilled to have all of them. First off, from Los Angeles, California, joining us is Dr. Angela Yee. There, Angela?
Yes, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me. And let me tell you a little bit about Angela. She has her psychology PhD degree in sports medicine, did her internship at NYU, at the Institute of Rehab Medicine, and did a fellowship following that at Mount Sinai Medical Center, specializing in brain injury research. And she is kind of our medical expert today, and will be talking to us in a minute about concussion in general. So welcome, Angela.
Thank you.
And I also have a return guest who I'm thrilled to see today, is Diane King. Diane's been on the show talking about kids and sports on a previous show several months ago, and we're happy to have her back again. She is a certified athletic trainer and also a registered dietitian, and she's representing today the Georgia Concussion Coalition, which was actually very, very active in getting the bill passed and getting all of the players to the table to get the legislation on the books. Diane also is president of the Georgia Athletic Trainers Association, so welcome back, Diane.
Glad to be back.
Good to see you. And we also have Mr. Buddy Curry. Buddy is the executive director of Kids and Pros and has been a former Falcons football player for the pro side. But post-Falcons, you were very, very active in youth athletic sports programs, and that's what you do pretty much full-time these days. Is that right, Buddy?
That is correct.
Thanks so much for joining us today. So we're going to welcome all our guests and start right into it with you, Angela. Before we get into the law, I'd actually like to just start talking about what a concussion is and how sports relates to concussion especially.
Sure, yeah. A concussion is actually any direct blow to the head, face, or neck. But actually, it's not just a direct blow to the head, but it could be a force anywhere hit on the body. And that force can translate to shaking the brain around. And so it's not just, oh, I hit my head, but it could be kind of a hit to the body.
So a violent shaking of the brain and the brain cavity is kind of what stimulates this whole event.
Exactly.
Okay.
And typically this can result in a very rapid onset of symptoms. And these symptoms typically resolve spontaneously over a short period of time. In some cases, some symptoms might evolve over some number of minutes to hours, but typically it's not expected that these symptoms should last for months or years.
One of the things I found in the research, Angela, was actually, and I'd be interested to see if you agree with this, some less than 10% of concussions have something as dramatic as a loss of consciousness. It's usually not that. Would you agree?
Yeah, so concussion is considered actually a very mild form of a brain injury, and it's typically, especially in sports, loss of consciousness does not always occur, if not being typical. And if it does, it's very brief in nature. Longer periods of unconsciousness is usually with more moderate to severe brain injuries.
And are there, Diane, certain sports that are more prevalent that you see that we would see a concussion with?
Well, certainly you think of the collision sports mm-hmm. as being the primary one, so football, things like that. But then when you consider other sports like soccer, so if you're doing a header and the ball hits your head mm-hmm. or you go up for a ball and you come in contact with another player's head, you're going to have problems with that. Lacrosse is probably one of the growing sports, just in terms of the numbers of people participating in the South these days. And because it's not quite yet the level of skill that you might see up in the North and the Northeast, there's a lot of contact injuries that occur with that sport as well.
Okay. Buddy, would you agree with that?
I would. The spring sports particularly, you have a lot of concussions in all different
mm-hmm.
sports.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, Angela, can you tell us a little bit about just the signs and symptoms of concussion?
Sure. The symptoms typically happen in four different areas. So the first is physical symptoms. Some examples of it, those symptoms are headaches, dizziness, balance changes. Cognitive is another area where it's more of thinking abilities that are affected. Symptoms like thinking slower, problems paying attention in class, or difficulty remembering things that the adolescent is being told. Emotional area is another area of symptoms where somebody might feel a little more irritable than usual, mood swings, or feeling a little more sad or nervous than usual. And then the last area is changes to sleep patterns, whether it's difficulty falling asleep or sleeping a lot more than usual, or sleeping a lot less than usual. So we could typically think of symptoms on those four levels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with younger kids, one thing to really take into account is they might not always be able to verbalize what they're feeling. So it is important to be careful to observe any changes that they might show, like just appearing like they're dazed and stunned, or being confused about what their next play is, or walking to the opposite end of the field and the opposing team's side, or forgetting instructions. So those things would be very important to just note, since they might not be able to verbalize what they're experiencing.
Right, and I know that when we have contact or an event, that certainly would be the first time that we might see symptoms, but I'm wondering if there aren't times that people assume that the kids are okay or people are okay, and then these symptoms come afterwards. But what is the other end point? Like by a week, something you should see something, or what's the long end of the symptoms that might come up?
Sure. So with a concussion, it's an immediate injury to the brain. So it should be a pretty quick, rapid onset of symptoms, whether they're detected or not. So I think that would be kind of the key area to focus on, is being able to accurately identify and know what you're seeing, because somebody might be experiencing symptoms, but it not really being identified until a little bit later, and then it might appear like they're starting to get symptoms at a later point. But it should be a fairly rapid onset of symptoms right after the impact to the head, you know, although it might be, you know, minutes to hours where the symptoms evolve, but it shouldn't be something that begins at a lot later point after the impact.
And what do you see on the field, Diane? So as far as symptoms coming up, or do you agree with Angela about what you'd see? Or,
well, I think the hard part is that every child responds differently mm-hmm. to this type of injury. And so what we would expect to see and what our game cards may say we should see in terms of symptoms aren't always the case. She's certainly correct in the fact that we often can confuse it with other things that may be happening. If they've got exertional heat illness, if they have not fueled and hydrated well during the day, they may have headaches that they're complaining about that, you know, could be mistaken for concussion-type symptoms and things like that. So, you know, a lot of times it's whether or not you see the play on the field where the athlete was hit. Mm-hmm. They come off the field, they're a little bit shaken up, they're not really feeling well, they can't quite verbalize what's going on, and you let them sit for a few minutes, and then you're going to do your sideline assessment, which will be, you know, a few memory words and things like that. You may do some muscle testing to make sure that they're okay. You'll certainly go through all the physical examination on the field at that time.
So what I'm curious as to what percent you guys, Buddy, for you too, you think that in the field of play you actually could catch the actual event versus just the kid that comes over and maybe you didn't see it, but...
I mean, it's pretty small. The number of times where you actually see the hit that mm-hmm. could have caused the injury, mm-hmm. It's not like getting to see the ESPN highlight films
right.
and things like that. So you have to learn how to
pay attention,
recognize
the whole field to play.
What's going on? Yeah. A lot of times, especially at the younger ages, the kids will come off the field and they won't know what to say to you. They mm-hmm. won't know that they should say, my head doesn't feel well, or my stomach is hurting right now. Or sometimes they're coming over to you every other play and telling you their stomach hurts. So, you know, being able to make the distinction.
Sounds like a kid.
Exactly. So you have to learn how to make the distinction. And certainly our role as athletic trainers in the high school setting, being there with them on a day-to-day basis, watching practices, knowing how they are on and off the field does certainly help. But you've got to also be able to act and react as a coach or as a parent to say, that child's not right. Mm-hmm. You know, something's not normal about how that kid is responding. You know, they may be sitting over there quietly when they're usually running around, you know, like a chicken with their head cut off.
Right.
And all of a sudden they're quiet and
different. Yeah. So you have to know what's normal to know what's abnormal. Buddy, would you agree with that for what you see with your athletic programs with kids?
Yes, I would. I think our role is to educate parents, kids, and coaches. So you have a committee of people that are looking at athletes and how they're responding to different collisions or whatever happened on the field. So maybe it's something that the trainer may not be able to recognize it immediately, but that coach may, or that parent.
So more
may.
Eyeballs looking.
Yes.
And certainly parents know what's normal for their kids too.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go back to you, Angela, and talk just a little bit about how exactly concussion is diagnosed. Like clinically, what do you see? Is there a test? Is there a tool? What do you see as far as making a diagnosis of concussion?
Well, there is no definitive exact tool to diagnose a concussion. It's more of using multiple tools. The recognition that Diane is talking about of was there, that hit or jolt to the head or body? Were there any changes in the athlete's behavior or thinking or physical functioning? And immediately removing the athlete from play and then making sure that they're evaluated by a healthcare professional who is experienced in evaluating for concussions. And what they'll do is take a further look at these areas in terms of their cognitive functioning, their balance, and monitoring their symptoms. In addition, taking a look at their previous history of have they had previous concussions before, and was there any seizure activity immediately following the injury or seizure-like activity, and any memory loss, any loss of consciousness. So all these factors would be evaluated and monitored to help track their recovery and get them back safely to playing the game. And I can't reinforce enough the need to have trainers because they are experienced in being able to recognize some of these subtle behavioral changes and physical changes that unless you're trained to really look for it, it's really difficult. So a trainer is somebody who can definitely add to assisting in managing a concussion on the field and off the field.
Okay, very good. Let's talk a little bit about once it is diagnosed, what is the treatment for concussion? I know there's a whole spectrum of severity here or acuity in terms of you mentioned that many of them spontaneously resolve. What would you guess on how many, what percent spontaneously resolve?
I would say the majority okay. would resolve fairly quickly. In adults, we could expect about 7 to 10 days of kind of a spontaneous process of brain recovery. Now, in the younger child and adolescent, it would take longer than that kind of recovery trajectory. So the important thing about after a concussion is more of the management and allowing for that time for the brain to heal, so that they don't get back to playing and potentially be vulnerable for another concussion. So the protocols that are typically put into place is to, one, monitor their symptoms and then monitor them and do a set protocol that gets them back gradually into physical activity in a safe manner.
Yeah, and we're going to talk
about that. That's typically the process that takes place after a concussion.
You mentioned age differences. So like a traumatic event for a 5-year-old playing soccer and a 18-year-old football player, do you see differences in recovery?
Yes, and so for adults, for children, their brains are still developing, so it will take longer for them to recover from concussion. So that's why we need to take extra precaution when managing their concussions. And it is, you know, children will respond differently, and they're still developing socially and academically. And so because the sport isn't necessarily their job, we want to also make sure that emotionally and academically we're managing getting them back into the classroom and also their adjustment to being taken abruptly out of playing their sport with their friends. And so there's a lot of additional factors that we want to really take into consideration and manage when we're working with children and adolescents.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Now, Diane and Buddy, a lot of this, we don't have the CAT scanner on the field. The events occur on the field of play. Diane, you referenced actually by sport, things you would look for or cards. So can each of you just kind of talk about what when you see or when a kid reports to you and says, I'm not feeling well? You mentioned a series of questions. There might be some muscle testing. Why don't you just kind of expound on that a little bit? We'll start with you, Diane.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of times at the high school level, when a kid comes over to report that they think they have hit their head or they think they might have a concussion, you know, it's easy enough sometimes for the coaches to say, oh, just go sit down over there. But I think you have to go through a series of questions and just history and assessment to see what's really going on.
Because it's highly unlikely a kid will come and say, I think I've had a concussion. They're going to not describe it that way, probably.
Right. That's not the typical way. We have had some athletes come into the training room who's, you know, come in a day after maybe they got hit and say, can you check me out?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the first order of events are really to just kind of clear away any kind of emergent, urgent care issues. So, mm-hmm. You know, do they have any bleeding coming from mm-hmm. places they shouldn't be bleeding, like their mm-hmm. ears? Have they had a laceration on their head because their helmet wasn't fitting properly or they're using poor technique? You know, all those kind of things can be reasons for why someone's head hurts. The questioning usually from there goes along the lines of, you know, give us a pain scale rating from 0 to 10, 0 being nothing at all, 10 we need to call the ambulance to come take you to the emergency room right away. Have you had a headache earlier in the day? Have you had anything to eat and drink? A lot of times this time of year during football camp, which is mm-hmm. what we're in. And we've had an unusually mild summer. We have not been in the heat that we've been mm-hmm. accustomed to. So now all of a sudden, kids are putting on their helmets and their shoulder pads, and they're going out to, you know, mortal combat with one another. And they're hitting, and now all of a sudden, well, that feels different. That doesn't feel good. And with a lot of the concussion information in the news, they typically think, oh, maybe I have a concussion. It's important to continue to go through the evaluation. So we want to make sure that they don't have any kind of cervical spine injury for the type of impact that they may have had, that there's not any other physical injuries that are going on. We want to know, are they dizzy? Are they nauseous? Do they feel like their vision is blurred and things like that? And those are the immediate physical things. We're typically going to go through a series of little memory tests, word game tests. Do you know what the date is today? Do you know what team you're playing right now? Do you know where you are? Do you know your birth date? We'll give them 3-word memory types of skills and then talk to them for a little while longer and come back and ask them what the 3 words that we gave them earlier. Hopefully the person doing the test with the athlete remembers the words they gave them. You know, then from there, the expectation is that they will start to feel better. if their symptoms escalate and all of a sudden their headache has gone from a 4 to an 8, if the vomiting has started, if they're having more problems with numbness, tingling, things like that, we're going to go back through and do some additional evaluation in terms of spine and head mm-hmm. injury and things like that. But, you know, at that point, they've been pulled from practice or competition. It's very unlikely that they'll return to sport that day. Mm-hmm. And then from there, as an athletic trainer, I'm going to send them to the medical doctor for additional evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we do, you know, start to have to tell our parents these days are, though, just because you go and you get a CAT scan at the emergency room and it comes back normal, that doesn't mean your child hasn't had a concussion.
Would you agree with that, Angela?
Absolutely. Okay. A CAT scan is just used more as a gross screening tool just mm-hmm. to rule out any.
That's just a snapshot in time, too.
Evolving yeah. issues.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you may pick up, you know, an unusual situation like a fracture. You could pick up, you know, an unusual clot or bleed or things like that. But it's not a definitive thing as to whether or not the athlete has had a concussion or is experiencing a concussion. And that's why additional follow-up beyond the emergency room is also important. I think a lot of times once the parents get out of the emergency room, they think, okay, we're good. We just need to sit out a few days. And that's not necessarily the case because symptoms can return mm-hmm. several days later if it goes, you know, unmanaged.
Okay, buddy, let's hear what you see when you're out with the kids and the parents. Or I'm especially interested, too, because there's some follow-up with the parents, not just on the field of play, but I'm sure there's some instructions you give to the parents when they go home because not everybody's going to run to the ER. So what do you see?
Well, in educating youth sports and youth coaches and parents and kids, many times or most of the time, the youth sports do not have trainers, certified trainers on the sideline.
Right.
So that coach has to be that mm-hmm. initial identification and also recognition. And if there's any question, we tell that coach to take the kid out. When in doubt, take him out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the coach and the parent, hopefully, when they recognize, they will make that decision. There are also tools that we give coaches, so on the sidelines they have a list of questions that they can ask. We're not asking them to be doctors, but mm-hmm. we're asking them to at least try to identify and then take them out to get to a medical professional.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. Okay, I think we're kind of done with the medical part. No, one more thing I wanted to ask you, Angela. Second impact syndrome. I was doing a lot of the research about if we miss a concussion or a trigger event and then we let them return to play or they don't identify somewhere along the way, the risk may be much greater, even in the same game, if they go back in. Can you speak a little bit to the second concussion syndrome?
Sure. Second impact syndrome is a condition where the brain really swells rapidly after an athlete gets a second concussion before the symptoms from the first concussion subside. And so this can occur, you know, days, weeks, or even minutes after that initial first concussion. And when it does occur, it is often fatal or severely disabling. Now, what we don't know is really the incidence rate of how often this happens. What we do know is this condition is actually quite rare. And so a larger concern for parents and athletes to focus on is more of kind of getting a multiple concussion versus getting the second impact syndrome. So being more focused on, okay, how can I make sure that after this first concussion, I can fully have the time to recover before I place myself in any kind of game situation where I might get another concussion.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much. Well, I think we've gone through most of the medical questions, and I want to let you go, Angela, but thank you very much for dialing in to us today. And
Thank you for having me, Tanya.
Very good. And let's just, before we let you go, let people know that you're connected to the Sports Concussion Institute, and how might they find you?
Sure. We could be found online at www.concussiontreatment.com, and all our contact information is on our website.
Very good. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Tanya.
Okay. We're going to come back in the studio and go back to Buddy and Diane and talk a little bit specifically about the new Georgia return to play concussion law. So I know both of you were active doing various roles. Why don't we start with you, Diane, in terms of just explain what the new law is, the process about how you guys got were involved in getting it passed and the timeliness of it.
Well, the bill number itself is House Bill 284, and it's actually part of an education act that helps ensure the safety of student athletes. This particular part of the bill is called the Georgia Return to Play Act, and it basically came out of the need to make sure that student athletes, you know, whether it was at the high school level or whether it was at the youth and recreational level, were receiving the same amount of education about concussion that an NCAA athlete or a pro athlete did. From several years ago, probably in 2010, were when some of the initial concussion legislation laws came into place. It usually had to do with the demise of an athlete.
Unfortunately,
as it related to the recognition and the care for that child. So the NFL stepped in after a period of time to help promote this. It's certainly something that, you know, at the professional level, these type resources are available. You have, you know, medical staffs, you have support groups, you have, you know, plenty of things for these athletes to be cared for. Same thing at the collegiate level. Well, as it starts to trickle down, now you have less education, you have more numbers of people involved. And so the whole point of creating this legislation was really to educate the coaches, to educate the parents about the safety and well-being of their children. And then the other parts were better recognition of what the signs and symptoms of concussion were. And then also the important part of it was safe return to play. Mm-hmm. So the return to play aspect is something that's really kind of carried us through as far as making sure that the legislation came about.
Mm-hmm. Buddy, what was your involvement in playing the role in getting the bill passed? And certainly you've been very visible advocate for the law and the kids in general.
Well, my involvement has been from a coach's standpoint and from training coaches and kids on proper techniques and fundamentals. And so when you look at the youth ball, which is the highest number of participants.
Do you buddy coach across all sports or just football?
Well, we do two sports, basketball and football right now, but it's primarily football. Okay. We've been doing it for 12 years as an organization, and we teach football fundamentals, and we also teach life lessons that we proclaim that football is one of the best games that, that you can play because of the team aspect and all that. But these coaches need help, and these coaches need to understand how to coach the fundamentals correctly. They also need to recognize what a concussion is and how the game needs to change and how the culture of the game needs to change, where we're teaching kids and also their parents, hey, let's have a culture of honesty where if there's an injury, let's bring it out and let's deal with it. Because as you look at the different levels as you gain grow up to professionals, there's some not good stories of people that have had that have been liars, if you will, like Buddy Curry was, that you have problems, and that's what we want to.
I know. I've watched sometimes on the Falcons, you'll see a hit, and then they'll be waving like, I'm good, you know, when they walk off the field, and then they have a torn ACL. Like, well, what are you talking about? You're good. Yeah, so certainly recognize that younger and younger as we move toward prevention to begin with.
Yeah, we call it changing the culture of the game. And there's a balance. And I know Diane mentioned it earlier. A kid can just be hot, and he comes off and he complains of a headache. Hopefully we can recognize that based on the kid, but you always have to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. So we still want to have a certain resolve and toughness in the game of football, but the other part of it is we need to be honest enough to bring out any injuries or any concerns so we can deal with it.
So there's a distinction between toughness and you're injured.
Yeah, yes. Toughness and being, I guess you could say, a fool or a liar, maybe.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit. I know one of the key parts of awareness starts with a baseline and making sure, is there some kind of, how you're talking about educating the parents at the beginning before play even starts about this is a risk, this is a possibility. Do they, how are we educating? Do we hand out things to them? Is there a baseline assessment that, or physical that they have to start with?
Well, yes to all of that. Mm-hmm. There are tests, the neurocognitive tests. One of them is called IMPACT. There's SCAD, SCAD 2, SCAD 3, mm-hmm. Several different kinds of testing formats that are designed to give objective baseline information in terms of the athlete's neurocognitive function. Now, the problem with that is the same way that someone might inaccurately use a CT scan result as the end-all be-all, it's simply a tool. So, you know, I think more important than some of the baseline tests themselves is the education component of it. Mm-hmm. So part of what this new law included was that you had to educate the parents, that you had to provide some amount, some form of education, whether it was a written format, whether it was video webinars, things like that. There's so many resources that are available.
So the bill doesn't say how, but education is a key component of the bill. You left to the organizations as to how they
That's correct.
Meet the provision.
And the reason for that was because they didn't really want to mandate anything mm-hmm. that couldn't remain budget neutral. Mm-hmm. So the recommendations were made based on getting the most bang for your buck, so to speak, in terms of reaching out to more people. So, you know, one of the resources that is available is a video PowerPoint presentation, so to speak, from the National Federation of High Schools. And actually, at the Georgia High School Association level, all coaches are required to go through that training. This was something that Georgia High School was very helpful in being able to encourage. The good thing about it is, kind of like that trickle-down theory that we talked about, it's moving down to the high school level, which means it'll move down to the rec level as well. And there's lots of things, whether it's through organizations like the Sports Concussion Institute or Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. Kids and Pros has, you know, wonderful resources themselves where the parents can go to get information and build their own toolkit. Mm-hmm. So it's not a one thing or another. It's having lots of resources available for for education.
What about, Buddy, you and I were talking on the phone before the show even about even looking at equipment and making sure that helmets are fitted correctly. And is that part of the education process or part of the starting baseline point of injury prevention?
Well, I mentioned two things. One thing from education, going back just a little bit, education, the Atlanta Falcons are doing a wonderful job. Mm-hmm. Arthur Blank has commissioned his both the Youth Foundation and the Falcons to provide information to youth associations all over the Southeast.
So they're really taking a leadership position on this.
They are. And we have what we call parent informational sessions, which myself and the community relations people handle. And we're going to be at 17 to 20 different locations from Tifton, Georgia, Albany, Georgia, all the way up to Carrollton and Northeast Georgia. So we're doing a good job, I think.
So where would we find where you would be? On the Falcons webpage?
You know, that has not been published
yet. We'll post it on the radio site then.
Okay.
So parents can find where to get that more education as you tour around.
Yes. So I'm sorry, what was your question again?
The question was talking about the equipment and preparing at the baseline level, like making sure proper helmets fit and how you involve educating the coaches and the parents.
Well, we suggest that they go into the website usafootball.com. Okay. I'm a master trainer for USA Football. USA Football, really referring from the NFL, has three main projects, if you will. Number one, educating a correct helmet and shoulder pad fitting. Mm-hmm. Secondly, educate concussion and concussion protocol. Thirdly is heads-up tackling, using your shoulder, the front part of your shoulder, instead of the crown of your head or the top of your shoulder. And that is a subtle change, but it's huge in terms of the impact. And really, this is a process. This is not an immediate fix. We're talking probably 5 years to a decade before these kids that are trained, that are 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, move on all the way up to high school. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, when you talk about equipment fitting, it is so important to have a correct-fitting helmet and shoulder pads. And we talk to the parents about, look, that helmet needs to be maybe a little uncomfortable. It needs to be snug. It'll fit after a couple of days if you let it kind of mold to your child's head. But if you listen to your child, that child is going to
They're going to say, I need more room. Exactly. That hurts me. Yeah.
So. And the same thing with shoulder pads. The kids want to make maybe look better with having a big pair of shoulder pads, or maybe like the pros, having a real small pair. So we teach both the parents and the children and the parent coaches how to correctly fit the helmet shoulder pads.
Okay, very good. So we've talked a little bit about baseline education for the parents, the coaches, the staff. Also a little bit about equipment fitting, seeking medical attention. So one of the things with this new law, correct me if I'm wrong, Diane, but let's talk a little bit about on the field. We've already covered, you're going to go through the questions, neuromuscular testing, memory, your variety of things, both at the rec level and the youth level and the pro sports, I'm sure, are doing the same kinds of things. But this return to play idea, the whole idea is once it's been identified, then what now has to happen for them to get back in the game?
Okay, so what the law says is that once it has been determined an athlete has sustained a concussion, they must be cleared by a healthcare professional who is, and in our law it specifically says a licensed physician or another licensed individual under the supervision of that physician, so a nurse practitioner.
A mid-level provider.
Right, mm-hmm. Physician
assistant.
Physician assistant or an athletic trainer. Mm-hmm. And the encouragement is that it's someone who has continued education in the treatment and management of concussion itself. Mm-hmm. So as we've, you know, already started to find, we have many pediatricians, for example, who may or may not want to treat concussion. So, you know, then the challenge now that the bill has passed is developing a network of providers who can take on these patients once they've seen their first-line physician and been evaluated and suspected of having a concussion. So whether it's programs at the Sports Concussion Institute, Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, I mean, most of the large hospitals have a concussion program. Gwinnett Medical Center has them, Wellstar has them. So a lot certainly around the metro area. The problem I think you run into is when you get out into a more rural area where your healthcare may be 100 miles away.
And neurologists are in Atlanta, but
exactly.
I'm in Jackson, Georgia. Yeah.
So one of the things that they're starting to look at is actually telemedicine for these types of injuries and consulting in that format. Mm-hmm. And it will continue to be developed and worked on and things, but I think that's going to be a help, again, in terms of creating that bigger, broader network of providers. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's important to see the sports medicine doctor or the pediatrician who knows that child. But if you start to have the problems in terms of some of the emotional and the learning problems that can develop, you know, over the course of a couple of weeks, to see the neuropsychologist, to see the counseling people, to see the psychiatrist even sometimes, is a part of that network of treatment. I don't think, you know, even from a medical provider standpoint, it's one person or another that is always only going to be, you know, the provider.
Like it always has to be a neurologist that releases them. It could be the regular primary care doctor that would know that kid.
It could be.
Know this. Okay, so not one size fits all here.
Correct.
Is the bill passed earlier this year? Is it actually law now, or does it take effect in January?
takes effect in January.
Are most people complying now or trying to?
They are starting to work on it now. Okay. Again, I think from the Georgia high school level, because it's the start of a school year, there's things that they are working to put in place now. At the youth level, Buddy and with Kids and Pros are doing a great job. Again, I think there's a lot of outreach programs that will go and talk to the different youth leagues, not always about some of this great information that he has, but at least the first responder information, you know, what do you do when you have a bee sting and the child may be allergic to it? You know, what do you do with heat illness when the child's not responding and they're, you know, have gone limp and are red as a beet and things like that? So teaching these coaches and giving the youth coaches especially that confidence to say, hey, this is good.
Buddy, is your organization trying, what are they doing right now, even though they're not required to meet the law until next year?
Well, they're in various levels. Mm-hmm. Some of them have joined USA Football, and some of them have the parents sign sheets that and really have are educational sheets, and everybody's on the same page. Some of them are just now getting to grasp the whole bill and what they need to do. But I think everybody is starting to be aware and in various stages.
And then this time next year, it actually will be a requirement that they have a release to return to play, correct?
That's correct.
So you'll actually be collecting provider signatures or sign-off sheets or passing a physical or something. Is that right?
I think that's still part of the process that we're trying to figure out.
Is what is the method and the process?
Right. In each individual facility or league will be able to develop their process. You know, and what works for DeKalb County may not work for Cobb or Rabun. So again, it was not trying to force the round peg in the square hole.
It's be compliant and figure out for yourself how you're going to meet the compliance criteria.
Right. Okay. Typically what happens with this type of legislation is after a period of a couple of years, they start to look at it again anyway and find a better process for it. So it's something that's ever-changing and always developing,
okay.
That's for sure.
Very good. We're almost to the end, but before we close the show, I've mentioned to both of you that I think a lot of times the listeners, rather than remembering statistics and lists of things, they remember the real stories that you experience on the field. So in the realm of concussion, I'm interested in a story that was memorable to either one of you. Buddy, we'll start with you. In this area?
Well, I'll share a story, actual story, when I was with the Falcons playing, and the difference between the culture then, and I'm talking about in the 80s as compared to now. So I'm playing in a game, and there's this massive hit this running back for the New Orleans Saints, and both of us were laying on the ground. And
which we see every Sunday and Saturday with college.
Right. Yeah. This was a little bit different for me, but it's kind of like Saving Private Ryan, if you remember when he was going across the bridge at the end and everything went black and it was a big gong. And so I'm laying there, and after a few moments, things starting to get clear, and I look over, and he's laying there too. And I'm thinking, I'm going to get up before he is, because I'm going to be a little bit tougher than him. So I'm struggling to get to my feet. I'm going, Lord, just help me get to the sidelines. So I struggle and get to the sidelines, but I'm at the other sideline. And then so I stagger all the way back across the field, and I get there, and everybody, including the trainers, and is going ding, 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 and just kind of laughed it off. I got some smelling sauce, and then I went back in the game. No long-term effects, at least up to this point. We don't know. But the culture now is I wouldn't need to be taken off the field. They need to come, and when they saw me stagger, get me
they'd
over.
They'd stop the play. They'd come out. They'd assess the trainers right on the field, would come to you. Right?
And one thing I talk to parents about and coaches is that we've got to change that. We don't need to teach these kids to be gladiators and to play through injuries. We need to be smarter. Football players and smarter people than that.
I know we haven't talked about it while Angela was on the phone, but I know there are certainly some long-term effects of concussion that can affect you later in life, like Parkinson's disease and neurological problems, so especially with severe hits and some of those. So it's not just, hey, it's going to resolve in a month or 10 days or whatever, but repeated injuries like for athletes that are playing years and years can have some long-term effects that we're still learning and uncovering. Diane, what about a story from you?
Well, I think the one that comes to mind is the gymnast who was doing a bars routine and spun out. She landed in a pit, so she really didn't have impact with anyone or anything. But because of the way that her head just kind of snapped back in a whiplash form, those gymnasts are pretty tough, probably as tough as the football players. Mm-hmm. You know, they just don't have the equipment on. And she got back up and went and did her routine again. But a couple of days later was when she really started developing just the primary signs and symptoms of a concussion. And the amount of whiplash that she had when she threw her head back was enough to jostle her brain and give her, you know, a mild brain injury. Yeah, so
Angela's point of violent shaking, not just necessarily a one hit
exactly.
Applied in this particular case. So pay attention.
Exactly.
Get educated is the name of the game. Well, believe it or not, we're to the end of the show. I want to thank you both very much for joining us, and Angela as well, to learn more about concussion, more about this new law, as we all learn how to be compliant and develop policies and what to look for to protect our players. So I appreciate that. And, Buddy, let's let people know about Kids and Pros and how they can find you and what you've been doing these days.
Well, Kids and Pros is a nonprofit character-based camp and clinic opportunity for different communities and kids and parents. So we go from Jacksonville, Florida, all the way up to Central Virginia, and we conduct camps and clinics. And the focus is to teach these kids the fundamentals. We also teach them the new heads-up tackling technique to take the head out of the tackle. And then mm-hmm. we have our NFL players share their life stories. And the stories are based on five core principles: sportsmanship, integrity, excellence, perseverance, and teamwork. And it's really a game changer for so many kids. They're listening to stories, real life stories of NFL players that did things sometimes the hard way and overcame huge challenges mm-hmm. to get where they are. And then we've referenced it to going to school and making good grades, being a good friend, and being a good citizen.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, thanks for the work that you're doing. And they can find Kids at Pros at your website.
Yes, and it's Kids and Pros. That's A-N-D, kidsandpros.com.
Very good. Thanks for joining us. And Diane, how can our listeners find you?
Well, I am in any number of places. I think one of the easiest places to go, as opposed to the Georgia Athletic Trainers Association website, is probably the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. So it's choa.org/concussions has a group of resources that are available for the parent, the teacher, the coaches. I will also add that the CDC also has a great concussion resource called Heads Up, and it is one that is available, and it has some learning opportunities for it as well.
Very good. Thank you so much. And just lastly, as a reminder for Angela, you can find her at www.concussiontreatment.com. So thanks for being here today and shedding some light on this important topic. Thank you so much.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.